Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to be talking this week in Cubs and White Sox baseball. We're going to be talking a little Bears, a little Blackhawks, and who knows, maybe a little MLB draft. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season is not happening right now, but that shouldn't stop you from heading on over to icehogs.com, getting yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing, my friend?
I cannot complain. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm watching the MLB draft while we're recording, and it's amazing looking at how young these kids are, and not just how they are, young they are, but how long young they look. Like, they look like babies.
Yeah, I know. I know. I was thinking the same thing during the NHL draft, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. But the kid that just got drafted, Noble Meyer, he's 18 years old, but he's like gigantic height wise, but he looks like he's got a 12-year-old's face. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you see that, even the college guys are just like, wow, you look so much younger than college. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, like, I'm looking, this kid that just got drafted, his mom looks young. So where do you want to start?
Well, the first half of the baseball season's over. I think we got a lot to talk about there.
All right, let's jump into that. So the Cubs had an opportunity this week to gain ground on the team that was leading the division, and then the Milwaukee Brewers with a 4-game set, and they literally just split, which was frustrating because I think they had the lead in every single game, I believe.
I mean, listen, the true frustrating moment of that series was the blown 6-0 lead in the first game.
Yeah, first game, right out of the chute. It's you're up 6-0. You're feeling good. You're like, all right, we're up 6-0 on this team. And, you know, especially after you just whooped the Pirates' butts. And you're like, okay, we're going to dispatch another division opponent. And you blow it.
And you know what? Listen, if you win that game and then you win those other two after that, losing the finale doesn't hurt as much. If you take 3 out of 4, it doesn't hurt nearly as much. I mean, it was a really, really weird series because you blew at least the one game that you should have won. You could argue the finale, you could have pulled that out too. That was a back and forth game, honestly. But, you know, you did steal that third game when you were down 1, top 9. Talkman hits the double to tie it, and then you take the lead on the error. The Cubs stole that one. And then you had the crazy, wacky second game on the 4th of July where you had another big lead. You blew it. You should have lost it twice. And then your defense came up huge, and you were able to snag that one too. It was a really, really weird series. But, I mean, really, the fact of the matter is you needed to take 3 of 4, and that's like, you couldn't afford to split. If you had a few more wins under your belt, if you were around 500, a split's fine. That's okay. But in the position you were in, you really needed to take 3 of 4. Now, a split isn't like everything's awful, but it just didn't really, you couldn't gain anything.
Yeah. I mean, this week they were above 500. And you're like, okay, well, we can live with that. But the problem is that they need to gain more ground than that.
Right.
They've fallen behind, what are they, 7 out of 1st in the division?
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, the Reds are like this mission from God team right now, where they are just winning and doing everything right. And you know, so obviously, the Brewers aren't the only team that you're chasing, but you still need to win games regardless.
Yeah, I mean, it's just frustrating because you know, this is a team that is saying that they're going to be, or they're looking to be buyers at the deadline, which is coming up in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not doing things that buyers should be doing, like, I don't know, being in the wild card race or be within striking distance of first place.
You know, I mean, here's the thing. I think the damage from the tough losses we've seen this season is too much to overcome. I think that you're seeing a team that is just, they're not there yet. They're not there, but at the same time, you see the competitiveness in this team. Because, I mean, look, you're the only team with a positive run differential, I'm pretty sure, in the division right now. Your record should be better than what it is. But you've let too many games slip away because of your flaws. You don't have power that a contender should have. You don't have that franchise face, that superstar. Ellie De La Cruz is a superstar already. Look, Ronald Acuna Jr. is a superstar. Shohei Ohtani is a superstar. Aaron Judge is a superstar. You don't have that. You don't have that, and you don't have true middle of the order guys. You don't have Happ and Suzuki are not hitting for any. I know Suzuki hit a home run today, but you know, the pace that he's on, he's probably going to hit, what, 14, 15?
It was his first home run since May.
That's not going to cut it. I think Suzuki's a fine player. I think Happ's a fine player. He's in a bit of a funk, but I think he's better than what he is. But you know what? He's not a cleanup hitter, and neither is Suzuki. That is pretty clear to me right now. They are not cleanup guys. They get on base. They have good eyes at the plate. But good guys having good eyes at the plate is one thing. Going up there and trying to draw walks when you're in RBI situations, you need guys that just drive in runs. You need guys that produce. You need guys that hit the ball over the damn fence.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been screaming this for a while. They just don't have guys with power. And the only guy on the roster that has consistent power is also a guy that will strike out 50% of the time in Wisdom.
And Wisdom, he's got like 3 hits over the past 2 months.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it, he was injured, but
but he's also, he's just, it's bad.
Yeah. He's been, I mean, he started off absolutely on fire and then mm-hmm. he's just been abysmal.
Right. I mean, he's got like, I think he's like 3 for 40 something right now. That's really awful. Here's the other thing that really sucks. And it's hard to imagine we're saying this, but that Nick Madrigal injury was another blow in that opening game against Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Because he has been playing pretty damn well. And he's been the ideal guy at the bottom of the order. You're like, okay, he doesn't have power, but he doesn't need to. All he needs to do is put the ball in play. And he's done that. And he's actually not only put the ball in play, but like finding grass and hitting it more than just 90 feet. You know, that was a tough blow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one thing that you could say positive about the way that this roster has been constructed now versus 2015, 2016, 2017, et cetera, is there's a variety of different types of hitters. And I said that, you know, back then is you don't have, you know, you have a lot of guys that can draw walks in, hit for power, but strike out. You don't have a lot of contact guys. You don't have line drive hitters, really. And you've got a better diversity of hitters, but you're still missing the power guy, which, you desperately need. You know, it's tough. And, you know, I think the thinking was we would get home runs as a collective. You know, we wouldn't be a home run hitting team per se, but you would get those home runs, you know, 20 from Happer, 20 from Suzuki, 20 from
Swanson. Maybe Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, like 20 from Bellinger. And you're like, okay, we add those up, but you haven't been getting that. You know, you've had at times guys hitting home runs, but it's not consistent enough. You know, the thing about having guys with meh power is that, you know, having multiple guys with average power is you're not getting that rate of home run or that threat of home run like you should.
I mean, right now, your biggest home run threat is Christopher Morel.
Yeah. I still don't look at him as like a home run guy. I think of him more of a line drive power hitter, but you know, we'll see how that progresses, but you're right. He probably is the biggest home run threat.
Right. And I mean, here's the thing. I like Christopher Morel a lot. When he's hot, he's hot, but he will go in those slumps too. And unfortunately, this team is kind of built on hot streaks and slumps. That's just kind of how it goes. Because even Nico Hoerner is, the last few weeks or so, hitting not very well. But I will give him this. He makes them pay when there are guys on base. He's been very good at that. But I think that he's a little streaky too. He's not obviously... I'm not trying to rip on him too hard. I'm just saying he's a little streaky as well. And so is Dansby Swanson. And so is Ian Happ. The definition of streaky is Seiya Suzuki. Because when he's on, he's on. But going back to the beginning of last year when he first got here, the slumps are horrific. And then he works out of them. And then it's up and down, up and down. And, you know, what's frustrating about all of that with the offense and that stuff is that you find yourself what, five games under 500 going to the break.
Yep.
And yet you have your top two starting pitchers going to the All-Star game.
Yeah. It's extraordinarily frustrating.
You would think you would at least be 500. And, you know, obviously there are other problems too, like the bottom of the rotation has struggled a lot of times. I mean, the
bullpen.
Yeah, you've been trying to figure that out. And I mean, you found more stability lately, but, you know, you're kind of limited what you have. I mean, you feel good about Adbert Alzolay, right? He's been good.
You do, but I mean, he had a bad outing this week.
Which, to be fair to him, are you referring to Milwaukee or are you referring to the okay, never mind. I was thinking you were referring to the loss against Cleveland, because I was going to say that's extra inning Manfred bullshit and he hadn't pitched in a while. But
no, they were talking about the was that 4th of July game, the extra inning game.
But I will say, to be fair, he got some ground balls that just kind of found holes,
right?
But overall, I feel good about him, because you look at the other saves he's had recently, he's been nails. But, you know, right now you've been doing this juggling act, and, you know, I will give credit to Michael Fulmer ever since that horrific start, he's been much better lately. But, you know, even though he's been better and he's using more of that sweeper, when he goes out there, you still got to feel a tad nervous, right? You know?
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, bullpens are tricky. I say this before, I'll say it again. The bullpen was, you know, you look the way it was assembled and you say, okay, Fulmer, Boxberger, there's logic behind that. You can understand that. And sometimes it just doesn't work because you know what? It's difficult. It's difficult to put something together in a bullpen every year when relievers are so fickle. And, you know, it seems like they found a much better balance. What's more frustrating is how avoidable some of these offensive woes are when you're constantly putting in has-beens and 4A players in there when you had opportunities this offseason to add more quality bats at a short-term price. You could have brought in a guy like JD Martinez on a two-year deal, or heck, you could have brought in Justin Turner or Michael Conforto. You could have made more of an effort to put in still productive bats without a long-term commitment and, you know, not having to rely on just washed up in quadruple A players.
I will admit, I thought the Matt Mervis signing,
Trey Mancini
signing was a solid one. And
as did I.
And he's sort of been cheeks.
Yeah, that is definitely one where I will eat crow. Like, I was huge. I'm like, I loved the move in the offseason. Absolutely loved it. And then,
loved it for multiple reasons. Is he's a guy that, you know, prior to him getting sick, he had some legit home run power. I mean, didn't he come close to winning the home run derby?
Yeah.
And he can play corner outfield. He could play first. He could play DH. And you're like, okay, not the, you know, the biggest of versatility, but there's some versatility in there that you could get a professional bat in there, even if he's been down the last couple of years and it just hasn't worked out.
No. And, you know, that's just one of those things. I mean, it just stinks that it had to turn out that way. Like, listen, we could all tell you right off the bat, Eric Hosmer was not going to produce. Like, he's clearly been over the hill for a few years now. He hasn't been that all-star producer in several years now. We knew that.
I'm not gonna shit on that one because they signed him to a veteran minimum, and he's a placeholder. We knew he was a placeholder. It was not, you know, a big deal signing.
Which is okay, but when you're batting him in the middle of the order, you lost games because of that.
Where I have the ire for it is the fact that, you know, the placeholder, the person he was being the placeholder for, hasn't worked out to this point. So you're like, okay, well then you could have actually brought somebody in that wasn't a placeholder that was actually going to be a player. That's where I get frustrated.
Sure. I get that. And, you know, I made the comparison the other day, since Anthony Rizzo left, first base for the Cubs has been like Bears quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been brutal. I mean, it's been this rotating door. Frankly, the best one has been when you've played Cody Bellinger there.
Yeah. But the thing is that was a temporary thing.
Right. But Cody Bellinger has been awesome. Like, really, really good. If Matt Mervis isn't the guy, would you just be tempted to say, hey, let's just extend Bellinger and he can be our long-term first baseman, or at least for the next few years? So when P. Crow Armstrong comes, he could play center field.
I would. I mean, Matt Mervis is gone back to Iowa and he is crushing it. I mean, it's almost 300 batting average with his slash line right now. It's 293, 408, 561 with a 141 WRC plus. And
you do hope that's a good sign and not just he's a 4A player sign.
I mean, those are numbers that are so good. It's hard to believe that those won't translate at some level to the majors. Maybe not the way we hope, but I mean, that's a nice slugging percentage, and I have to believe that's going to translate.
Here's the thing. If he's going to come up and he's going to have some holes in his bats, he better be hitting 30 plus homers a year. You need some sort of mass production from a first baseman.
I need him to close some of those holes in the bat, in the swing. But I mean, you know, we look at Kyle Schwarber. He was a guy that was like, oh man, is he ever going to produce? And he had stints where he went back down, and when he came up, he didn't look like the guy. He's like, well, maybe he's just a guy that's going to be big power, but, you know, not a consistent player. And, you know, he's proved to be a Major League Baseball player. You know, it's always one of those frustrating moments where you don't want to give up on a guy, especially, you know, how many games did Mervis get in the bigs? I mean, rightfully he got sent down, but how many games did he have? It's tough to write a guy off.
Oh, and I'm not writing him off by any means. I'm just saying as a safety net idea.
I don't want to get rid of Cody Bellinger, period.
I don't either.
I know. I wanted to talk about this. This is something I was going to talk about later, but we might as well jump into it now. Is I know there's a lot of people like, we should flip Cody Bellinger. The Yankees are interested. What are we going to get for Bellinger? I would rather keep him.
Now, you know, here's the thing. If you trading a guy like him this day and age, you're probably just going to be getting scraps back.
Yeah. I mean, Stroman might be a different situation because, you know, while we're talking trade bait, he struggled his last few outings.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Here's what I ask myself. What are teams going to give you for a pitcher that relies a bit more on contact? Marcus Stroman does not blow guys away.
No. And
as good as he's been, you can look at some of those good starts and say, well, he was efficient, but you did see some balls in play that were hit pretty hard that went to guys. And you did ask yourself, is there going to be a little period where there's going to be some evening out? And I think we saw it over the past few starts. I'm not saying that he's going to end up having a bad year or it's all going to crash down, but I think he was due for a clunker or two because of that.
I mean, the thing is, you know, we call them bad ones. But they weren't awful. It just,
no.
Comparatively to where his first, you know, three quarters or 8/10 of the first half of the season.
And he had the blister too. So,
yeah, but you know, having a couple in a row, you're like, ugh. You know, maybe Jed sees something that we don't see. And there's a rationale for why he's not extending him. It's a shit or get off the pot moment though. Is you can't give him a qualifying offer. So he either leaves in free agency and you get nothing, or you trade him. And, you know, if you're Jed, that's the question is, I don't care about this year. I don't think, even if you make the playoffs, I don't think you're good enough to make noise as far as contend for a World
Series. Oh, I don't see any way how this team would beat the Braves in a 7-game series or a 5-game series or a 3-game series.
Right. So I'm not so concerned about the second half of the season. Like, oh, what are we going to do without him? If you're Jed and you are confident you can replace him in the rotation, then you flip him. But Bellinger, I think it's silly. He's played well. he's been the cog that drives the Cubs offense. He's a great defender. He's been a good clubhouse guy. And you're not going to get anything for him in a trade. I don't think you trade him.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how that's all going to play out. I mean, it's like day by day, I have different feelings where I'm like, okay, this is clearly not it. You need to sell. Or some days I'm like, well, you know, maybe not. It's kind of one of those back and forth things with me. It's just, I think at this point, I just wonder, what's the value? What's the value between keeping him versus what you're going to get back? Because like I said, I don't know how much you're going to get back for a pitcher like him. But I also say, if you're going to extend him, you better darn be sure that he's going to be able to keep this up over the next few years, because he's not old, but he's not young either.
Right. I mean, you know, he's several years older than Lucas Giolito, who's a guy that the White Sox, the very loud rumors are they're going to part with at the trade deadline.
Yeah, we'll get to him in a bit.
And I think they're about 4-year difference between those two. So that's a
sounds about right.
That's a significant time period for
it is.
A pitcher. Yep. So that's one of those things. It's, you know, I know I flip-flopped on the Stroman situation, but I've been steadfast in you have to make a decision, because going to that lame duck period, the longer that goes, the less likely you are to extend him. And once you go past the trade deadline, you know, you're ponying up, or you're letting him walk for nothing. And I hate letting a guy walk for nothing. Is he the guy that he's been the first 80% of the first half for the next couple of years? I would doubt it.
Yeah, it's particularly good.
But do you have somebody better, because you are coming into that contention window where you've got to start winning? And you know, I don't like having to rely on all young arms. It's you get inconsistencies, and there's too much unknown.
Mm-hmm.
For every Justin Steele, you get I don't know, 12 Adbert Alzolays, or worse. So not to shit on him, but you know, he was a guy that we thought we were going to get more out of. So yeah, we have guys that we're excited about in the minors. It's just how many of them are going to come up next year and hit the ground running?
Who the hell knows?
I mean, I'm at the point where maybe you do re-sign Hendricks.
He's been awfully good.
Even when he hasn't been good, he's been decent.
I think today's start in New York, he was better than his stat line showed. I mean, the last home run he gave out literally is a routine fly ball in any other park.
Right. But, you know, he's been, you know, we worried about how he regressed so quickly. And I agree with you wholeheartedly, the position you've taken where you need a guy that misses bats and that has power stuff. And Kyle Hendricks is like the polar opposite of power stuff. But, you know, you can't argue with career results. And you know, there's a lot of Bob Gibsons and Roger Clemens and Nolan Ryans that beat you with just absolute, you know, gas. But pound for pound, Greg Maddux might be the best pitcher of all time. And he threw like a 93 mile an hour fastball.
You know, it is also, I mean, and you're right. One thing I do always point though is, you know, it is a bit of a different era where velocity and movement is very, very important. But with that said, Kyle Hendricks has seemed to have been able to figure things out since coming back from injury, and maybe the physical issues were a big reason for his struggles in 21-22. And, you know, he's calling his own game out there.
I mean, it's seeming like there was physical issues, not regression, which is, you know, you don't want to see him have issues, period. But that's much better for him and much better for the Cubs.
Right.
I think their Cubs are sort of in a position where they might have to re-sign him. And is Smiley there for one more year?
Yes.
Okay. So you'd have Hendricks, Steele, Smiley, and you'd be losing Strom. You'd have two spots to fill in your rotation.
At least.
Could be worse. Let's see. We got the Madrigal injury we talked about.
Oh, we have some news.
Cubs drafted somebody.
Yes, they did.
Second baseman out of Maryland. The highest drafted player out of Maryland history.
Matt Shaw hit 24 homers last year. Slash 341, 445, 697, OPS 1.142 last year, 43 walks to 42 strikeouts, 20 doubles.
I mean, he seems like a good player. There was a couple of shortstops that were ranked high. I know we have shortstop depth, but usually the thinking is you draft a shortstop and you can transition them to pretty much anywhere else. But you know, we have a second baseman that's coming into his own, and you drafted a second baseman that is a college player. So he's going to be here sooner rather than later. Interesting.
You know, I gotta tell you, I don't get overly worked up with a lot of these draft picks because baseball is such a crapshoot. It's such a crapshoot.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think I could ever handle being a GM in like baseball or hockey, because when you draft, you are drafting kids. Like, you can't be a Jed Hoyer and know about some, you know, 5'8" shortstop from Sheboygan, Idaho, playing for Sheboygan High School. You can't know about this guy. Like, you can't. Like, you're relying on scouts, and you're projecting 3, 4, 5, you know, years out or more on some of these guys. You know, might be draft a guy that's 18. He might not come till he's 25, 26. That's like 7, 8 years that you're projecting out. That's hard, you know, and how do you balance, all right, where are our positions of needs in our organization? Where do we see this guy fitting? What's our salary cap situation potentially going to look like at that point? What's our major league roster going to potentially look like at that point? I mean, it makes my head spin. Like, basketball, you're drafting for right now. Football, you're drafting for right now. In Like basketball, there's like 60 dudes drafted, 65 dudes. Like it's possible to know all of those as the GM. The NFL, you know, the first four rounds, like I'm a Joe Schmo and I know almost all of those first four rounders and have watched them play. So it's like, it's doable and you can project them. It's, but baseball and hockey, it's tough, man. It's real tough.
Well, and here's the way I look at it too, is it's not a lot of, I mean, it's obviously a combination, but so many times in baseball, I feel it's not just the player, it's how you develop them. And the better you are developing, the more you get out of certain players. And I mean, you could say that about any sport really, but especially baseball when they have to go through the minor league system and learn all this stuff at a professional level. So, I mean, you know, you can bring in the best raw talent, but if you're not good at coaching and developing, then it's not going to do you much good.
And, you know, it's funny because like with the coaching and developing, you look at that and you're like, oh, okay, well, we think we're really good at this. Like the Cubs have identified that they have a pitch lab and they're like, we are confident our pitch lab is going to do this, that, and the other. But really, what are the results so far of that pitch lab?
Well, I get kind of tired hearing about it because I don't know if you heard about what Ron Coomer said on the radio the other day. Did you?
I did not.
They were trying really hard to mess with Jameson Taillon and look what's happened. And then you know what? You remember that 8-inning shutout he threw at Yankee Stadium?
Yeah.
Wasn't really throwing as many sweepers, was kind of trusting his fastball, kind of doing more what he does. Doesn't that make you think?
It does. You know, it's one thing to be like, hey, we've identified something that we think maybe you can make you better. But if it doesn't work, then stop doing it.
Well, and I think there's this whole idea of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you can't help but wonder how they had a similar approach on the other side of the ball with Jason Hayward. You tried to make differences off a guy coming off a great year. Why not just let him do his thing? Do you remember when Javier Baez played his best baseball? It was under Joe Maddon. You know what Joe Maddon did? He said, let Javi be Javi. I just sometimes wonder and speculate and worry that the Cubs try to do too much with some of these players.
I mean, I get trying to fix, like that's what an organization should do, is identify like players and that's what you're trying to do. And you coach them up. So when you bring in new players, you're like, okay, we're identifying strengths, weaknesses, and improve. And then the other thing is, all right, well, we're bringing in players that may have failed somewhere else, but we think we know where they're, why they failed, and we can fix it.
Like, well, of course, if there's something to fix, yes. But if there's nothing to fix and you're just messing with it.
But there's a time and place. And
right.
And I think where you fail, like, yeah, everybody should be identical. Like, have, you know, Javi Baez, Javi being Javi. Is there room for Javi to improve? Oh, absolutely. Javi had a lot of things that he could improve on. But part of being a winning organization is identifying, is, you know, you can't have a one size fits all system. You have to identify individual players. Some players might need to get yelled at. Some players might need a hug. Some players might need you to go in there and tell them why everything that they've been doing since they were 12 years old is wrong and fixing it. Sometimes you just need to get out of their way and just let them do what they're going to do. And that's part of your job as the organization, is to figure out how that player ticks and give them the tools that they need to be the best they can. And for all of his flaws, Joe Maddon was, you know, identified players, but at some point he still is limited what he can do. But you have to be able to identify what makes your players go. And if you see something you did is failing, you need to be big enough to go, you know what? We told you to do this. We were stupid idiots. Don't do it anymore. Go back to what was working.
Right.
We talked about Tyone had the revenge game pitched great.
That was awesome.
That's what we expected we were going to get. And hopefully that's the start of something, you know, new. You know, I know everybody's written him off as well. That's, he's going to be bad for what the 4 years we signed him for. Is, if you remember, a certain Japanese pitcher was brought here and didn't do so well early on, and between injuries and just poor pitching. And by the time he left, we were like, oh my God, he was amazing. It's, that contract is a long time, and he was brought here for a reason. If you can succeed at the Yankees, you can succeed elsewhere. So hopefully this is him going, all right, I kind of know who I am. Let me go out and do my thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's, hopefully that start was a sign of good things to come. It might not be, but you damn well hope it is, because you need him to be.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't care so much about this year, because I think this is sort of a wash.
But you want to build on as much as possible.
Oh, least. Absolutely. I don't want to suck, but I'm saying is, you know, I'm not going to look at it as if he pitches real well in the second half, like, oh, he's carry, you know, we need him to carry us. No,
right.
I just need him to find his groove so that next year he comes in and him and Steele give you a really solid 1-2.
Yeah.
On the other side of town, things are starting to look real bleak.
Yeah, this past few, 2 weeks has not been very good.
No. I was worried about that Toronto series, and they get swept. And what should have been a winnable series against the Cardinals, they lose 2 of 3, and I honestly don't see a way that this team, makes the playoffs. I really don't. Even in this terrible division, I think it might be, you know, time to give up the ghost.
You want to know a crazy stat?
Sure.
We're at the All-Star break, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a single team in the AL Central is above 500.
That's true.
You're in fourth place. You are a season low 16 games below 500. 16 games below 500. And you're only like 8 back. I'm not saying they're in it. Okay. Don't mistake that. I'm just saying that's nuts. You should be 12 plus back.
Oh, at least. Yeah. You're a bad team. And earlier you said the Cubs were the only team in their division with a plus run differential. And that's right. But I'm looking at the AL East. Everybody has a plus run differential. And everybody has a winning record in that division. The team that's in last place in the AL East would be
Boston would be well in first.
They would be 3 games in first in the AL Central.
Yeah. Isn't that nuts?
If the White Sox were in the AL East, they would be 20 and a half games out of first.
Oh man.
So that's perspective. I mean, but if you look at, I mean, they just, they're losing ground. They're halfway through the season. They're 8 games back. They're fourth place in the division. You can write off Kansas City. That team is toast.
I mean, they might be as bad or worse than the A's, frankly.
Yeah, they're right there, neck and neck. Can you consistently put together a win streak? I mean, you have to, you're 16 games back. You have to basically, you would have to go on a 16 game winning streak to get into first. You can't do that. You just can't do that. And then if you look at, what about the wild card? The wild card?
No.
You're 12 and a half out of the wild card.
No, that's not even, that was never a possibility. It was division or nothing.
Yeah. And you would have to leapfrog everybody in your division, plus the Angels, plus the Mariners, plus, whichever teams, like 3 teams from the East. It's not possible. So you needed to go on a streak here at the end to get yourself in some sort of position to stay within striking distance.
And you were close. You were close heading into Oakland, and then you lost to Oakland.
Yep. The Oakland series was just, that was, I mean, I said that you have to sweep Oakland. And I believe they get swept by Oakland, right?
They lost 2-3. Okay. They barely squeaked out that last game. They gave up 21 runs in 3 games to a historically bad team. In one game in which you had a significant lead and then you blew. And then another game where you had an even more significant lead and you almost blew it. The opening game, you lost right off the bat. Game 2, you had a lead. You blew it. You took the lead back. You blew it again. You lost in extras. And then the third game, you were up like 8-2. And then you ended up winning 8-7, but just by the skin of your teeth. They gave you an absolute run for your money. Oakland did. And you should have absolutely gone in there and destroyed that team. And you didn't. And then you knew, you're like, okay, well, crap. Then you have to go home and then you have to deal with the Blue Jays. Blue Jays swept you right out of your own building.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't get really blown out in any of those games. I mean, you lost one run, and extra innings, but
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because they were clearly the better team.
I mean, the one game was crazy. Lance Lynn, give him credit. He's been pitching well lately.
Yeah.
Pitches a gem, strikes out a ton of guys, and then you lose 6-2 in extras. It was nothing going to the 11th.
Yeah, you score in extra innings. You're like, all we have to do is not let them score. And they hadn't, what did they have? 1 run in 10 innings. You're like, okay, we just have to hold them to no runs this one inning. And they put up 5. Aaron Bummer could have gone out onto the mound, taken a dump, and it would have been a better performance. Like, literally pulled on his pants and pooped on the mound. And people would have been like, that was a better performance than what he actually did.
Steve Stone. Well, you know, Jason really did a good job of pulling down his pants there. Nice form on the bend over.
He did a good job. He did a good job of keeping his heels forward because he didn't want to get poop on the back of his shoes. Oh God.
See the way he bends down exactly. And I remember back when I was playing, when I played in Baltimore, and my skipper used to show us that in the locker room, the proper ways, they'd coach us up really, really well. That's a good job. That's a good job by old Aaron.
But that was just, and that was a doubleheader that day. And it just, that's brutal. And, part of it is, I know this has been a point of contention with fans and the team. Why the fuck is Tim Anderson still batting second?
That is an entirely different, not different, but separate conversation.
It's part and parcel, because you look at it and you're like, okay, this team has there's been times that they score a lot of runs, but there's times that they just leave so many guys on base, and you put a guy that's just struggling mightily, and you're like, well, we're going to put him second to get a ton of at bats and, in between our two of our better hitters, Benintendi and Luis Robert. And we're going to put him out there. And why construct your roster better? Like I know players like consistency in the order, but if you're a manager, you need to sit people down and be like, listen, like we need to ride the hot hand. We need the guys that are hitting well to get the most at bats and the most opportunities to bat around each other to give us the best opportunity to win. You've had inconsistencies in pitching. You've had some bullpen meltdowns, Joe Kelly and Aaron Bummer. And you need to be able to score runs. You're winning games by scoring runs, not by shutting them down with your pitching. So to keep throwing Tim Anderson out there, who's got a slash line of 223, 259, 263 with what is that, like a 560 OPS or something? Like
his OPS going in today was 531.
Yeah, he has been miserable.
His OPS plus going into today, I'm looking at Baseball Reference, so the box scores be added, but the OPS plus, keep in mind, like 100 is average, right?
Yep.
It's 48.
He has been bad.
No home runs.
And the thing is he hasn't even been this week. He's probably padded that, because he's got a couple hits this week. He got a triple the other day, and he's had a couple of singles. And so this has not been his worst. I mean, it has not been good this week, but he's padded it because he's been better than his average, which has just been abysmal.
Yeah. And I mean, even today, we could say, sure, he had a few hits here and there, but today he had a chance to win the game and he struck out.
Are we sure that Tim Anderson's not just really injured and that Lurie Garcia, which wore his uniform and has been playing?
Lurie Garcia. Oh my God. They went to the lab from Face Off.
Lurie's like, here's my big opportunity to go 0-for-5 with strikeouts.
And no one will know it's me. So I could bask in this, but Sean, here's the crazy thing to keep in mind. Tim Anderson from 2019 to 2022. So 2019 through last year, that's over 374 games. He hit 318 with an OPS of 820, an OPS plus of 122, 51 home runs. So, big home run hitter? No, but when he began his career,
sneaky
he
power.
Sneaky power. Yeah, you're right. Sneaky power. That's the best way to say it. He could hit high teens home runs. And if you're a guy that hits above 300 and you're able to do that, that is a lot of value. Absolutely a lot of value right there. And then you compare that to now. I mean, it is just so out of sorts right now with Tim Anderson. It's got to be, as we said before, a combination of physical and mental. It is just, it's been horrific so far this year for him. And we've sat here and waited for him to bust out of the slump, and yet it didn't happen in the first half. Maybe it'll happen in the second half after he gets some rest. I don't know, but we were waiting for it all first half, and we're at the All-Star break, and it didn't happen in the first half.
Right. I don't think it will. I just, honestly, I'm being honest. I don't think he's going to recover this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's something is way, way, way out of whack. This isn't a fluke thing where it's like, oh, he's getting BABIP to death. He's doing what he's normally doing. It's just finding gloves. Like it's just there are at-bats where he literally just stares at the pitch going right down the plate. It's like he's not all there.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy kind of like Javi, where he's special when his confidence is high, and that confidence is broken. And like we said, there's got to be some combination of physical and mental, and I don't know where where that lies, what percentage of which, but he's not the right guy that he was, and it's a shame that they just keep trotting him out there batting second to get beat up every time.
Yeah, it's not the ideal place for him or for the team.
And it sucks for the White Sox, because this week you lose 5 of 6, and you got 2 good starts from Lucas Giolito. You got an excellent start by Lance Lynn. You got a pretty good start from Toussaint on Saturday.
He's been pretty solid for you.
Yeah, he gave you a good start. You just gave him 5 innings pitched, 2 earned runs. I will take that from a fill-in.
Yeah, sure.
And they scored goose egg for him. So you're like, you got decent starts. I mean, the bullpen start was mad, but Cease's start wasn't very good. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But other than that, like, you've got 4 good starts, and you couldn't score runs, and your bullpen wasn't good, and you couldn't score enough runs.
No, you couldn't get anything going against Mikolas in that game, that one game. And it's like, you know, you see like, okay, you got pretty much everyone who's healthy right now in there, and you still couldn't scratch anything across.
And Dylan Cease has not been the same guy he was last year, this year.
No, and I mean, okay, you look at some of the stats, you know, strikeouts per 9 still looks good. The FIP is pretty solid, not amazing, but 3.78, that's better than average. The whip is higher, the ERA is higher, and it's just not the same quality of outings you're getting.
And I know this doesn't make any sense at all to anybody that's not a Chicago sports fan, but tell me that Dylan Cease, and I don't want to call it a regression, but a step back, doesn't make you afraid of what'll happen with Justin Steele next year.
I hear you.
You're like, how does that make any sense? They're 2 different players on 2 different teams. And then you're just like, Chicago sports. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I don't think that's crazy. But I hear you.
Yeah, I might be crazy, but it's crazy in a way that I feel like a lot of people will look at it and go, you know what? I'm in the same crazy as you are. I feel that.
You're crazy. I'm crazy too.
But we're at the All-Star break now, and I think both teams just really need this break.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to talk Hawks or you want to talk Bears?
No, we can talk Hawks.
Okay. Nothing crazy, but I'm just sort of starting to look at where they are with their roster and starting to piece together, you know, lines. And because I don't know if the Blackhawks are going to make any other moves.
No, and I thought that maybe they'd make another move or two, but I don't think that there's going to be anything else major going on here. You know, you brought in Corey Perry to many people's sadness and anger and frustration, but you did that.
And you didn't bring back Max Domi, which a lot of people were bummed by. And I wonder what you know, what the thinking was. And is that, was that something where, you know, he didn't want to come back after he was traded because he didn't want to get traded again?
Maybe.
Or did they just be like, you know, hey, he's not the future. We want to, we either want to get older veterans or I don't know. I would like to, I wish I understood what exactly happened, because I thought that would have, he would have been a really good line mate for Connor Bedard.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm thinking maybe this is just one of those situations where the Hawks were like, listen, I think we have a list of guys we want to take a look at and see. I think we have our scrappy veterans that can play out there. I think that this might've just been a situation where the Hawks are like, we have our priorities. We have where we want to look. We have what our ideal outcome of the season is in addition to Bedard. Just one of those things. It's like, you know what? It's just, it's not in the cards for us. That just could be it.
It's possible. But you know, I'm ready to root for him. I like Domi. You know, I'm not going to shit on him. He came here. He was a great sport and played well and got a nice return for the Hawks. And so I'll root for him.
Yeah, me too. I think that looking at what you have with your current roster, you can at least say like, okay, look, you know, Connor Bedard and Lucas Reichel are going to be your most intriguing forwards to watch for the future, right? I mean, those are your two, yes, big building blocks that are currently on the team. Correct. And I see no need for Lucas Reichel to play anymore in Rockford at this point. I think you got to let him play in the NHL.
I would agree. I think this year, you're better off, and this will segue into what I wanted to say next, but I think letting these kids play together on the big roster with, you know, your good mentor coach is, unless they're absolutely just losing confidence because they're struggling, it's a different story. But as long as they're holding their own and showing flashes, I think it's makes sense for them to keep the young players up and playing. But where I'm going to segue that is, there's two players that are not eligible to play for Rockford. And so they either have to play in the WHL or have to play in the NHL. And one of them is a no-brainer, Connor Bedard. He's going to be in the NHL. The other one, though, is Korchinski. He can't play for Rockford this year. He's not old enough. So he either has to play in the WHL or play for the Blackhawks. And that's going to be an interesting one because he's one of your, you know, he's arguably the second best prospect you have in your whole organization. It's probably, it depends on your point of view, but it's either him or Reichel. But
or the other guy they drafted in the first round, Oliver Moore.
Yeah, but I think, you know, he's at this point, you would say it's those two because you have,
yeah, no, baseline. Yeah, sure.
You know, maybe in a year from now, the story changes, but for right now, it's probably a coin flip between Korchinski and Reichel. And you know, if you bring him up now, you're burning a year of eligibility on his entry level deal. You're like, do you want to do that and have him be due for a new contract the same time Connor Bedard is? But that's, you know, or do you kind of want to have him linger more in the WHL for another year? So that's going to be an interesting question, and it's interesting to see how Kyle Davidson deals with that this year, because he's going to have to make that decision. I think he can play like 14 games in the NHL. So I wonder if he'll start with the NHL and then see how he fares in 2 weeks and then make a decision on what they're going to do with him the rest of the season.
It'll be interesting to see how it's handled. I mean, obviously, he's, regardless of what level he's on, he's one of the top guys to keep an eye on outside of Bedard.
So I put together, this is early, so I'm sure things will change, but here's my very, very early lines and defensive pairings.
Ooh, all right.
So you want to start defensive pairings or forward lines?
Let's start forward, defense, goalie.
Okay. So first line, Taylor Hall, Connor Bedard, Taylor Radish.
Taylor, Connor, TBT.
Second line, Philip Kurashev, Lucas Reichel, and Andreas Athanasiou.
Okay.
My third line, Ryan Donato, Tyler Johnson, and Nick Foligno.
Okay.
And my fourth line is Colin Blackwell, Jason Dickinson, and Corey Perry.
Okay, so you got Corey Perry on the fourth line.
Yeah,
okay.
I think I'm as confident he'll be a fourth liner as I am Connor Bedard will be a first liner.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. I mean, because you look at what Corey Perry in his prime was obviously a 30-plus goal scorer, but he hasn't been that in several years now. So I'm not saying you're wrong. I think it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I mean, that fourth line is that scrappy line. He's an agitator.
Yeah, he sure is.
And he, you know, that's what he's going to do is he's whatever it takes to kind of change the dynamic of the game. I think that might be a good spot for him. The other options to toss in there would be a Cole Gutman, Mackenzie Entwistle, Reese Johnson, or Boris Tkachuk. Those are your other options. But these are the guys I put on the four lines. My first defensive pairing, I answered sort of my own question. I don't know if this is how Kyle Davidson will feel, but I have my first pairing as Seth Jones and Krejcinski. Second pairing, Connor Murphy and Tenardi.
Okay.
Third is Vlasic and Wyatt Kaiser.
So the Kaiser roll and the pickle.
Yep. That's what you need. That's how you know you'll have a good pairing is because you have a good tandem nickname.
Kaiser roll and the pickle.
Yeah. The other options in there, you've got Isaac Phillips, Philippe Roos, and Nikita Zaitsev. But I think they might go young at the bottom. And I think Mrazek is going to start at goal and be the primary, but at some point Soderblom's probably going to overtake him and be the primary goaltender.
I think Soderblom should get the majority of the starts this year, because if you have something in him, now's the time to find out if you do.
I think he will. I think Mrazek is probably going to get the bulk early on and then sort of transition over once they sort of feel out the defenseman. Once you sort of get your pairings in order.
Yeah. It wouldn't shock me if he was the starting goaltender on opening night in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I think because if you've got, I mean, you're going to have all new pairings, like these are all new pairings on your defense. So if you're going to have, you know, inconsistency and young players in front of him, you don't care if Mrazek gets, you know, beat and loses confidence or whatever. Like, he's not your long-term future. Meh. I think once they sort of figure out and fine-tune those pairings and get a more solidified defense in front, I'm not going to be surprised. And I think it's probably the better idea to move Soderblom into the primary spot and see what you have. Because I think the thinking, you know, even prior to this draft is he was your future number one goalie. So you might as well test that theory out.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you're in a rebuilding season, you don't have anything to really lose by playing and seeing what you have.
Right. And, you know, I look at these lines and this defense or this team, and I'm like, yeah, this is not a terrible team by any stretch.
It's scrappy.
Yeah. I mean, you've got two lines that are real NHL lines.
Well, you know, it's like, yeah, I mean, you look at those top two, you think, okay, obviously the eyes are going to be most focused on Connor Bedard. We all know that. But hey, listen, Lucas Reichel was your most intriguing prospect before you brought in Korchinski even. And then now you have Connor Bedard, and you've seen the promise that he has. So the fact that you're going to let him truly see what he can do in a full NHL season likely this year, and the fact that, you know, Taylor Hall, I think, is a good player. He might not be a superstar like he was drafted to be, but I think he's still a good player.
And you're going to see it when he's playing with Connor Bedard. And right. Reichel, not only did he improve last year, but I think when they had consistency together, Reichel and Athanasiou had some nice chemistry together. So I think pairing them together, and Kurashev is a guy who I really think is a future player when this team becomes good. I think you're probably going to have some growing pains here and there, but those two lines are actually are NHL lines. And the bottom two lines, you know, I think there's potential for those to just go off the rails because Corey Perry's old. Nick Foligno's old. So you're pairing like raw young players with old ass players, and you might catch lightning in a bottle and find some good chemistry and be able to play scrappy, play and be able to, you know, to get guys in front of the net and score a few goals. But, you know, you have the potential for those to go off the rails, but you've got two real lines, and I don't like the depth that you have it and in the blue liners, but you've got Seth Jones is, regardless of what we thought about the contract last year, he played like a legit number one defenseman.
It was good last year. I mean, he wasn't just an all-star because you needed to have someone in there. I mean, he was legitimately a good player last year.
Yeah, you look at his stats. He's a legit number one defenseman. And Korchinski's, arguably, your second best prospect on this team. You put those together and you're like, okay. And then Murphy's a solid veteran. And you've got a couple of younger guys in there that you're kind of excited about that are, you plan for it to be part of your core defense, top four defense later on in future seasons. So is this a good team? No, not yet.
No.
But does it have significantly more talent than last year? I would say so.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, Connor Bedard alone makes this team better. But, you know, hey, you can look at what you have now up and what you have brought in. I mean, if you can get a similar season that Taylor Hall's had the past few years, and if you can have a repeat of what Athanasiou did last year, where he can score 20 goals, 20 assists, give you 40 points, you know, I mean, that's, you're not going to be unwatchable awful. And I mean, hell, last year they were better than I thought. And that was a roster that should have not been watchable at all.
Right. Like they overachieved last year. Like the team that Kyle Davidson put out there should have just, they should have run the table to be the worst team. And they were scrappy and won games, but they weren't good.
No. I mean, it's, and you know, this year, you know, obviously they're not going to be a winning team. They're not going to be a playoff team. But if they're doing what they did last year. They're playing hard every night. You're seeing great things from Connor Bedard, and they're competing. That's what we can ask for. And I think we can have fun with it. Knowing where we are, knowing our path, and knowing that we have the building block in there makes it a lot easier to say, you know what? We know this team isn't going to be a cup contender, but we can enjoy this.
Right. And, you know, Taylor Hall, if he stays healthy, 2 years ago, he was a 20-goal, 40-assist guy. So you pair that with Connor Bedard, you're like, that would be exceptional to have. I mean, exceptional.
Yeah.
And, you know, last year, Radish was a 20-goal scorer. So, I mean, I like the potential on that first line and the second line. It's just the third and fourth. Who knows what you're going to get?
Might get some punches.
But yeah, I'm excited for hockey. This team is not going to be a playoff team, but they're going to be fun to watch.
Yep.
But the last thing I really had on my docket was the Bears, and there's not much, but we're like 2 weeks away from training camp starting. So we're getting awfully close here. And we're about, a little over a month away from the first preseason game. First preseason game today is July 9th. The first preseason game is August 12th. So we're like a month and 3 days from that first. So that's crazy to think about, that we're that close to playing an NFL game of football.
It's going to be here before you know it.
Yeah. We're 2 months away, almost to the day, 2 months away from the first game of the season against the Packers.
Yeah, that's going to come quick.
They have 1 week, they have joint practice against the Colts, and then they play the Colts at the end of that week in the second preseason game. I might drive down to Indianapolis and go to watch those open practices against the Bears and see how that looks.
You're going to storm the field. Put me in, coach.
Run out on the field in my stilts, holding my Marty Havlat crock pot.
With an old leather helmet. What is that man doing? Blah, blah,
blah. Mount the side cups for holding cans of beer on the side of the leather helmet. God.
That's awesome. Hey, if you do that, definitely share in detail on the show what you observed.
Oh, you know, I texted you, but so my friend's son plays hockey at the fifth, third center where the Blackhawks practice. He's plays like peewee. I don't know what league they call it, the peewee hockey. And there's always players there. And so my friend is texting me. He's like, hey, here's a video of my son watching Connor Bedard take slap shots. So he's just standing there like literally up against the glass behind the goal, watching Connor Bedard just take slap shot, slap shot, slap shot. They said the day before DeBrincat was there, which was
who just got traded to Detroit.
Yeah. I can't root for him anymore. But it was interesting that he was there. I didn't think that he would, you know, be. I didn't think he would be on the Blackhawks this year, but it was interesting that he was there with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, and now he's a Red Wing. Which, hey, you know what? It doesn't hurt as much now that the Red Wings aren't in our conference anymore, but still, it's like,
did you see who else was in that trade?
Oh, yeah. Wasn't it, was it Kubalik or was it Kurashev?
Yeah. Dominique Kubalik.
Kubalik, yeah.
They kind of, the Detroit kind of fleeced them.
Yeah, I would say they did.
Man, Ottawa really, really took an L in that because they overpaid to get him and then took an L on the trade when they traded him out.
Yeah, they got 1 year of him.
And Detroit extended him to a 4-year contract with an AAV of $7.875 million a year.
Yeah, they did that right away. I mean, they acquired him and they immediately extended him. But, you know, it's like people were talking about reunion with the Blackhawks. That was never in the cards. And, you know, the fact that we have the path that we are now, the fact that we have Bedard to build around and we have this rebuild plan, it's like, you know, whatever. It is what it is. I'm not thinking about past players and whatnot. This isn't Stan Bowman. Because if this was Stan Bowman, he would 100% be back.
Oh, yeah. They love bringing back guys.
Happened all the time. So, yeah, that just kind of is what it is.
Is there anything else you wanted to discuss?
No, I think we'll save some other topics for next week. I do have a topic that one of my White Sox fan friends brought up. It's something hypothetical about Jerry Reinsdorf and selling, but we could bring that up next week.
Okay, that sounds good. And we'll talk more Bulls because summer league started and, you know, we'll have some games under our belts to just dissect.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...